Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. We're glad you joined us for Advanced, and today we have an article about Chicago history retold in music. It's going to be very interesting, so thanks for being with us as we discuss this together. Good to be back in advanced class with Campbell and Ruth. Welcome back.
Thank you, Doris. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here. And I love history, so I like talking about it.
Do you like history, Campbell?
It's very intriguing. It is very interesting.
Well, history is important because we can learn a lot from history. And sometimes, you know, we don't think much about things that happened in the past. But when we do think about them, we like to find out some things that we didn't know about. Now, I know a little bit about jazz in Chicago, but I didn't know about this kind of history. So it's not really about jazz in this article, is it?
Well, it's not. It's about history, but it's about expressing an event through music, which I thought was quite interesting that people were so excited about this thing that they did with the Chicago River, that they're going to tell the story of this project using music.
Yeah, it sounds like they're making like an opera or something about it, but it's going to be like a symphony, right?
A jazz symphony.
A jazz symphony. And I think it's interesting the choice of using jazz because, you know, Chicago was very, very central to the development of jazz in the world.
Well, that's true. And so this article that we're talking about today about Chicago history retold in music talks about a jazz symphony that's going to bring the Chicago River's reversal to life in a novel way. Now, just that whole beginning there gives us something to talk about because the Chicago River's reversal is one thing. They brought it to life.
That's right. Reversal, we know the word reverse, which means to change directions. And as we'll find out in the article, what they did is they reversed the direction that the river flowed. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing they did, which is an amazing engineering feat in and of itself.
Right. And then we see the word novel here. Novel, we usually think of like a book or a story, but novel here is an adjective, and it's talking about just something new or something interesting or different.
Right.
And when you bring something to life, you make it interesting and you make it important and you make people think about it.
Well, like we were talking about innovation a little bit yesterday and different ways of doing things. And I would say that in an innovative way, you could also use that word almost, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm. That's true. You could.
In a very different way. Well, and when we look at the article here in on page 12, it's talking about the lost panoramas. Now, what has that got to do with it, Ruth?
Well, we'll discover as we read the article that two authors published this book which tells the story of reversing the flow of the Chicago River. That's just the titles of the book. And a panorama just means a wide view of scenery.
So I think the people should look at the book before they listen to the symphony because they'll know what it's all about. Mm-hmm. I think the book shows the pictures even a little bit more than how can music really show that? But I think the music gets the feeling of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking yesterday about different learning styles.
Mm-hmm.
Some people really enjoy just looking at things, and some people would rather listen. And the people who write the music try to express ideas through the music so people can listen to it and get the same thing that they would if they looked at it.
Right. I think, as you said, Doris, music expresses emotion. So probably as they were looking at these pictures, they got certain emotions out of it. And so they were trying to express that through the music.
And I think probably when they had this musical was performed, they probably showed these pictures because they often do that now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice that we can see so many images, even like when our choir is singing, they have pictures in the background. And probably when the symphony was playing, they were showing the pictures, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were. And it is interesting when you look at a multimedia presentation like that and you get the feeling from the music and then you see the picture and you can really see how they fit together.
Right. And actually, I mean, I think of movies nowadays, they always have the soundtrack in the background, right? And that helps to add to the mood and helps to add to what's happening in this in the movie.
So if you're having the music, then you need the pictures in the background
right.
too. That's multimedia and that's very important. But the fact that they're talking about a Chicago's River reversal. Now, when you reverse something, you don't really think about reversing rivers. We think about some clothes we have that are reversible. We could wear them both ways. And then we also talk about reversing the tide of something by changing it for something better.
Or putting your car in reverse. Instead of going forward, you go backward.
Right. So you change the direction completely, don't you?
Right. So the idea here is the Chicago River was going in one direction, and now they're changing it, and they changed it and made it go the other direction.
Isn't that strange that people would try to change the way a river flows?
Well, as we begin reading this article, we'll discover exactly why they wanted to do that and thought it was important.
Well, in fact, as we read the article today, we're going to find out that this is called the seventh engineering wonder of the world. So it sounds like it's something pretty unusual, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So let's read the first column here and find out why they wanted to do this.
Chicago history retold in music. A jazz symphony brings the Chicago River's reversal to life in a novel way. It was called the seventh engineering wonder of the world, a Herculean effort to reverse the flow of the Chicago River. Typhoid fever, cholera, and other waterborne diseases were running rampant in Chicago in the late 19th century, and for good reason. The river was being used as a dumping ground for stockyards and tanneries. That toxic stew was pouring directly into Lake Michigan, the city's source of water. Turning the river's current in the opposite direction could wash the sewage and other detritus away from the city, via the Illinois River, into the Mississippi River, and Chicago could continue its explosive growth as a modern metropolis. That story has been told in history books and classroom lectures, but now it's coming to life in a new way. A jazz symphony composed by Chicagoan Orbert Davis and inspired by the revelatory photo book The Lost Panoramas, when Chicago changed its river and the land beyond. In effect, Chicago history will be told not by academics, but by writers and musicians.
You know, Doris, people enjoy lists. We have the 10 wonders of the world, the 10 wonders of the ancient world, or the 10 wonders of the modern world. And I guess there are 10 engineering wonders, too.
Right.
And this Chicago River reversal is number 7 on that list.
I don't know what all the other ones are. But
I don't either.
Me either.
Anyway, that'll have to be another lesson, right?
Yes, yes.
But this is called the seventh, which means it's pretty important, isn't it?
Right. I think it would. It's actually pretty impressive. I mean, reversing the flow of a river, that would be a pretty massive project.
It was, and I think we can see that with the choice of adjectives, a Herculean effort. If you've read your Greek myths, you know about Hercules, the very, very strong figure in those stories who could do things. And because it's such a difficult thing to do, we call it Herculean.
Right. I could almost think of, you know, like a superhero type of thing, you know, something very superior that nobody could do that. Right.
Well, most people wouldn't think of doing that. So
No.
And most people wouldn't even know how to go about starting to do that.
Even as I'm reading this article, I'm still trying to picture how they went about doing that. So
Because it's very strong when a river is going one direction. And how can you get it? You can't pick it up and turn it around, shake it, and have it go the other direction, right?
Right. But they did it for a very good reason, as we read all these horrible diseases, typhoid fever, cholera and other waterborne diseases were running rampant in Chicago. That means everybody was catching them. People were suffering from them as a result of this dirty water.
Mm-hmm. Well, a long time ago, they didn't have many shots against typhoids and so forth. In a lot of places like now, even in India and Africa and other countries in the world where there's some dirty water around, they find a lot of cholera and typhoid fever even now.
Right.
Yes, they do. When water is dirty, it's not good to drink. This is the kind of thing that you can catch from it.
Right, and we see here why the water was dirty. It says the river was being used as a dumping ground for stockyards and tanneries. So back then, it didn't have as many regulations as we do now about what you can put in the water, what you can't. And so they were putting some pretty disgusting things in the water.
That's right. And if you look at the phrase a dumping ground, we often see that term meaning a place that you get rid of something you don't like anymore. Like a landfill is a dumping ground for trash.
Well, can you imagine the stockyards in those days? Because almost all of the cattle from Texas and Oklahoma and all those places where they raised cows, they'd send them up on the train to Chicago, and then they would butcher them there. And then they would have the tanneries to take and make leather and things out of it. And all mm-hmm. that was done in Chicago.
Wow. Right. Chicago was huge in this stockyard and tanning industry at this time in the 19th century. So you had all these big fenced-in areas where you kept all your cattle, and of course their waste has to go somewhere, and they just put it right in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And tanneries, too. Were the chemicals things, too?
Yes, because they have to use chemicals to treat the cow hides to turn them into leather.
Right. And I also think of, you know, if they're butchering, there's probably, you know, leftover animal parts and things like that.
Oh, yeah, it sounds terrible.
Yeah. So I think I like the description here, the toxic stew.
I was going to say that. Yes. Hey, toxic means poisonous.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a stew, of course, is a combination of many things. And if you can imagine all the blood and the guts and the chemicals and all
thank
together.
You. Boiling stew.
Thank
I
you.
Like
that. It's time for lunch now.
Yeah, I like stew, but, you know, it's made out of good things. You know,
right.
Like that. But it just means a lot of things all together, brewing together, right?
Right. And so the at that time, the river was flowing into Lake Michigan, which was the city's source of water. So you can imagine all these poisonous, toxic things getting into the water source and then people drinking this water.
We know that was true of a lot of lakes all across America. And they tried to clean up a lot of lakes and a lot of rivers. And this is just one story. But that happened in many places that they had to try to clean up the rivers and the lakes. And they're still working on it, aren't they, Ruth?
Yes. They are. But of course, back at this time, a lot of people didn't connect dirty water with these diseases. They didn't realize that that was the cause of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they were realizing at this time and knowing that they had to clean up the water. And how can they clean up the water? Well, let's send the refuse in the opposite direction.
Exactly.
That's going to wash the sewage and all of the other what?
Detritus.
What is that?
Well, it's just another way of saying
debris,
the sludge and the decomposing.
The garbage, right?
Yeah.
It is, but very, very small particles of that. So the river was flowing into Lake Michigan, and because that was a city source of water, the engineers got together and tried to figure out how they can reverse or change the flow so the river flows the opposite direction. And they did that. It's an incredible engineering project with locks, which would be ways that you stop the water, and dams and other things.
So by way of, via means by way of, the Illinois River into the Mississippi River. Now, the Mississippi River is one of the biggest rivers in the United States, and it goes up and down the country, doesn't it?
So, in other words, they're getting all of this dirt out of their own water and giving it to somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't know if the people on the Mississippi River would have appreciated that or not.
Right. So, if you look at back at the book, it says the Lost Panoramas, when Chicago changed its river and the land beyond. So, it's affecting the land all around, not just Chicago.
And I can imagine not everybody downstream was happy about that.
Right.
That's true, yeah.
So they changed the river's current. We use the word current when we talk about the flow or the power that a river has to go in a direction. When they changed it so the sewage would go in the opposite direction toward the Illinois and Mississippi rivers. And that way, Chicago could have clean water.
And they could continue their big growth, explosive, just like an explosion, because Chicago grew very quickly in those days, and it became a very modern city, didn't it?
Yes, they refer to it as a metropolis, which means a very modern, busy place.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to do that, they had to get rid of these diseases and the cholera and the typhoid and clean it up. So they just said, well, all of this stuff that we're pouring into the river, we're going to send it someplace else.
Yeah, we're going to change the – we're not going to have it go into the lake where we take our drinking water. We're going to send it in the opposite direction. Well, of course, this story or this event had been talked about in history books and classroom lectures, but now we're going to hear about it in a new way.
Well, actually, some of us probably hadn't even heard about it too much, especially over on the West Coast. We have our own problems over there on the East Coast.
Right.
But have you heard about it before?
I hadn't heard about it before this article.
Did you,
either.
Ruth?
I had heard of it, yes. But I didn't know much about the details of it.
Right. So if you keep up to date, you can find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people will talk about it, probably classroom lectures about pollution and things like that. They probably talked about it.
Well, I'm sure kids who live in Chicago, of course, they learn about their city's history. So they would hear, they would read about this in their books, and they'd hear their teachers talk about it.
Well, I'm sure that engineering classes, too, because this is an engineering wonder of the world. So probably people in studying in that field, they would know about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. So now we're finding out that it's not just something of history, books, and classroom lectures. It's coming to life in a new way, as we said earlier, a novel way. A jazz symphony has been composed by Chicagoan. I like this word, Chicagoan. This is just means someone from Chicago.
And, you know, it's interesting, Campbell, that we use different terms for people in different cities. Like someone from Chicago is a Chicagoan, but someone from New York is a New Yorker.
Right.
And from Seattle, they're a Seattleite.
Right. Mm. So it just
and
depends
Los Angeles.
On the city. So don't ask me how you tell which is which, because I don't think there is any rule.
I know. I think a Taipeiite.
Taipeiite.
Or a Taipeian.
Taipeian.
No, I don't know.
A Taipeian, right?
Yeah. Taipeian, that's even better.
Shanghaian, whatever you'd say, right?
But anyway, this Obert Davis, he was someone who lives in Chicago, and he was inspired by this book that we looked at the cover of at the top of the article, The Lost Panoramas, When Chicago Changed Its River and the Land Beyond. So he looked at this book, he looked at all the pictures, and he thought, wow, I could tell this story in music.
And, of course, this still be in the history books because it says, you know, that it won't be told just by academics, not just only by professors in school and teachers, but it's going to be by the writers who wrote the books and the musicians.
And the music. Mm-hmm.
So it's another way of telling the story in a different way. So people will see how this great effort was to clean up this beautiful place. Although nowadays people might say, well, I don't know, should you really put it into the Mississippi River? That's what I was thinking, Ruth.
Right. Well, I thought of that too. They were only thinking about their own individual problem and not how the way they solved it affected other people.
Right.
Probably there'd be some regulation today that you couldn't do it. Who knows?
Right, exactly. I think they would probably put up some laws about that.
But anyway, it's still a very interesting way to show it. And you can show events in different ways.
Right, and I like how they describe this photo book as a revelatory photo book. So it's something that reveals. It's something that, you know, exposes something that many people didn't know about.
And Chicago is a very interesting city. There's so many things you could learn about Chicago and the history of the way it grew. And they did have a lot of history in jazz, which we're going to talk about more later.
Yes. And another interesting thing is how this book came to be written in the first place, which we'll learn about next.
Okay. It's going to be an invaluable discovery, and we're going to find out that as we finish reading today's reading.
An Invaluable Discovery. Co-authors Richard Kahn and Michael Williams spent years unearthing 21,834 forgotten photographs, documenting in luminous black and white the reversal of the river and its triumphant and disastrous effects on the world around it. Their 2011 book, in turn, has led trumpeter Davis to tell the tale in the Chicago River, a major opus he and his Chicago Jazz Philharmonic will perform at Symphony Center, with historic photos projected on a screen. Neither the coffee table book nor the symphony would have happened, however, if the precious photos hadn't been discovered more than a decade ago in the basement of the James C. Keary Water Reclamation Plant in Des Plaines. The stench of decaying film negatives attracted workers' attention and drew them to an even more precious find, 130 boxes of glass plate negatives spanning 1894 to 1928, with written records accompanying them.
So, an invaluable discovery. If something is invaluable, it's just so much value that you can't even measure it.
Right. It's so precious that there's no value you can place on it.
So what's so invaluable about this?
Well, the authors of this book spent years unearthing, which means digging out or bringing to light these 21,000 forgotten photographs. In other words, they discovered that these photographs were available, and they started digging through them to get the material for their book.
Can you imagine that? I can't even keep up with some of mine. I think I have hundreds of photos, maybe a couple thousand, I don't know.
Right.
But can you imagine 21,000 photos? That seems like an awfully big job to me.
Yeah.
Well, and many of the young people today can put that many photos on one tiny thumb drive. And, of course, back then, it was boxes and boxes and boxes of these pictures and negatives.
Right. And the interesting thing is that they were forgotten photographs. So they were just sitting there for years and people didn't know about them.
That's why they unearthed them. And when unearthing, you think putting ground on top of it, taking and sweeping away the dust. But, I mean, unearthed them means that they discovered them. They found something.
That's right. And they may have had to dig them out from under some other things. And these photographs were documenting, which means they were showing the progression of something or the historical value. And I like the word luminous, black and white. Black and white photos can be incredibly beautiful when the black is really black and the white is really white. They do just kind of shine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they must have been really taken with good cameras in those days, even though they were not the same kind as we have now, because sometimes photos fade. And if they could still use those photos, they must have been pretty good at the time.
Right.
Yeah, well, black and white photos tend to age better than color photos, which is probably why they were still as good as they were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we actually see some of these photos scattered about our magazine here. The photo at the bottom there is also one of the photos from this book.
Yes, that's true. And it says that these photos, they're talking about this thing that happened, and it was triumphant, which means it was victorious, but it was also disastrous. So how can something be triumphant and disastrous? It seems conflicting there. Mm.
It does, but I think it depends on who it's affecting. Mm-hmm. It's triumphant for the people in Chicago who figured out how to make the river reverse, so they got rid of all the typhoid and the cholera. It's disastrous for the people who are now at the other end receiving all of that stuff.
That's right.
Right.
Okay, so this book came out in 2011, and so because they had this book, well, this trumpeter, Davis, he wanted to tell the story of the Chicago River, right?
Yes. So we learned earlier that he was a Chicagoan, meaning he grew up and lived in Chicago. And now we learn that he's a trumpeter. He's a trumpet player. That's the instrument
he plays. We're both trumpet players.
That's right. So he decided to tell the story.
In fact, Campbell's a trumpet player.
That's right.
Three
we're all trumpet players.
Three trumpeters.
Yeah.
So he's going to tell the story in a major opus, which is a word we use to discuss to talk about a piece of music.
Right. He and his Chicago Jazz Philharmonic. They would perform this at the Symphony Center with the historic photos projected on a screen. So, see, they do have a multimedia thing. Mm-hmm. So while they're playing, you see the picture. So that makes sense. It makes it a little bit more understandable how they could get the feeling of it.
That's right. So you can hear the music and see the pictures and then and just feel the sense of the emotions as we're going through. So we continue by saying that neither the coffee table book nor the symphony would have happened, however, if these precious photos hadn't been discovered. So when we talk about a coffee table book, we're talking about a book you put on your coffee table. It's more of a discussion piece.
It is. It's not a book that you sit down and read cover to cover. A coffee table book is usually full of pictures. Mm-hmm. It's something that, you know, you see in someone's living room that you pick up and you'll look at a couple pictures and then put it back down again.
Mm-hmm. Most of their pictures are people's babies and kids and relatives, usually.
Well, that would be a photo book, but I think a coffee table book is one that's published that is meant, that's usually a large size that describes something in pictures.
Right. But you just put them there so when people come and you have a cup of coffee with them, they see the book and they look through it. So you leave it there for everybody to look at, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So here we see that neither that book nor this symphony would have happened if these pictures hadn't been discovered more than a decade ago. So they were discovered over 10 years ago in the basement.
Right, in the basement of this James C. Curie Water Reclamation Plant in Des Plaines, which is a suburb of Chicago. So this is the name of the building. It was named after a man, and they were cleaning out the basement or something, and they came across these photographs there.
That's pretty interesting. More than 10 years ago. Huh?
And I like what attracted them to these photographs.
Oh, it was the smell, wasn't it?
Oh. Yeah, the stench of decaying film.
Stench
usually we talk
strong.
About the stench of decaying bodies. But
or even garbage.
Right, yeah.
There's anything that decays is really smelly.
Well, I love words, and I think some words are so descriptive. When you hear the word stench, it means something is really, really smelly and unpleasant. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you look at the word like aroma, which is another word for smell, but that would be wonderful and marvelous.
Like a steak, the smell of a steak.
Yeah, exactly.
This stench is quite different. And the decaying film negatives. So the negatives were very important to this. So the fact that they're decaying, they better hurry up and do something about them before mm-hmm. they get completely useless, right?
Well, and you know, this is common. If you smell a really bad smell, it's, well, now what is that? Where is that coming from? What is causing that smell? So that it drew them, the workers, you know, were looking for the source of this stench, and they discovered this very precious find, 130 boxes of these pictures.
Can you imagine that? Glass plate negatives.
And, of course, cameras and photography have changed a lot in the past 100 or so years. In fact, a lot of our students may not even know what film is anymore.
They probably have never seen film.
Or what a negative is.
Right,
exactly.
But at this time, negative was not even on film. It was on a glass plate because photography was different back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, imagine way back from 1894. No. Can you imagine they were even taking pictures then to 1928? And they had written records with them. So that somebody really did a good job in keeping the records.
Right. And I think that's important so that people know exactly, okay, what is this photo? What is this a photo of?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was very important so they know what they're looking at. And it could document, which means to make it very clear what was going on through all these photos.
So tomorrow we're going to find out more about what they found, what was on the images on the photos. So you'll want to follow along as we retell this story, not in music, but in discussing it on the radio. So we'll be with you again when we discuss it again tomorrow.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye. Take care.